folks, I'm here at Mad Dog Software, all the way out in Boston. So I've flown out, started last night, flew out here. Here I am. We're going to talk about Star Trek Legacy. We're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff, too. And this is Dr. Ian Davis, the Mad Doctor himself. And why don't you just tell us a little bit about what Mad Doc does, and maybe, if you could, why you're potentially called the Mad Doctor.
I started Mad Doc 7 years ago. I had been working in the industry for 4 years at that point. I'm the Mad Doctor because before I got into the game industry, I got my PhD in artificial intelligence at Carnegie Mellon. So I'm technically robotics, but artificial intelligence.
Right.
So everyone at my first job in the industry called me the Mad Doctor, and that became my game handle. And
sure. Is it your gamer tag? Is it your Xbox?
It is my gamer tag. It's.
Of course, now you're getting all sorts of friend requests.
Yeah, I have one extra. I have one extra letter in there. So.
and who's this?
This is Rutgers. She's an English bulldog. Say hi, Rutgers, and she's the official mascot of Mad Dog Software these days, as well as my baseball team in the over 30 league I play in. So she helped me through much of the development of Star Trek Legacy, and in the last week, she basically sat next to me the whole time on this very couch while I tested the game. She sat, right. Stared at the screen the whole time.
Well, that's good. I have a kitten who's very interested in LEGO Star Wars these days, but not as much into the other Xbox games. But so, Star Trek Legacy is a ship-to-ship combat on a fleet scale. Maybe a little bit of an overview. I mean, I've seen other games before in the past, Star Trek-based, that were similar, but tell us about it.
What we, I'm a veteran of several Star Trek games, so I was the lead programmer, co-project director on Star Trek Armada 1, and the creative director on Star Trek Armada 2. So I've done a lot of Star Trek, and there have been a lot of Star Trek games out there that captured different aspects of the universe.
Sure.
And what I found was that none of them started from the position of what is combat really like for the captain of the starships.
Right.
So you have some really great, very tactical games that have been out there in the past that require a lot of detail, some that were based off of the old board games, and those are great games, but you're being the engineer, you're being, you know, the transporter person,
sure.
the weapons officer, the navigation officer, as well as the captain. And then there were the Armada series, which I worked on, where it was an RTS game set in the Star Trek universe. But that's how we went about making it.
Right.
Whereas when I first thought of the idea for Legacy in the end of 2001, early 2002, the idea was take the essence of Star Trek combat and build that experience. So don't take a genre and make a game that has Star Trek on it for
sure.
that, but
sure.
actually make an essential Star Trek combat experience.
So one of the things I've noticed when I was looking at actually Armada 2, not Armada 1, and now I'm assuming this carries on with Legacy, is that it's 3D.
Yes.
And I don't mean, you know, 3D models and things like that, but just the idea that the combat doesn't take place on a plane.
Yeah, we thought it was really important to make it feel like you're actually in outer space. And we went about reproducing these battles, which the typical Star Trek battle that you see, the exciting thing that you'll see in the shows, the movies, whatever, is a battle between anywhere from 2 to 8 ships.
Right.
And the battles take place in space, 3D. Things are at different levels. They're flying above
right.
each other, below each other. But you still have a sense of orientation in Star Trek.
Right.
So it's this, to capture Star Trek physics is to mix naval combat with air combat and a little bit of space combat thrown in there. So there's three different types of physics and combat that are all mixed into Star Trek Legacy combat.
So is there still sort of the idea of there being a plane? Because, I mean, in space, obviously things could be coming from absolutely any angle at all.
Yep.
But yet that doesn't lend itself very well to the strategy that our minds are used to sort of dealing with.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, in outer space, when you have a solar system that has multiple planets, things do tend to be on a plane. It's just the way the universe forms.
Right.
So, when you look strategically at a map in the game, you can think of it 2D, but the tactical combat takes place in 3D.
Okay.
So we've really captured the best of both worlds with that.
So are there any, real-time strategy games generally focus around resources?
Yeah.
Resource collection, building, upgrading, sort of thing. There's sort of common elements to various RTSs. How does things like resource collecting come into a Star Trek game?
Well, that gets back to the Armada series, because Legacy, really, we set up from the beginning saying this is not a real-time strategy game.
Right.
So there's strategy and there's tactics in it, but it's almost more on the level of what you'd see in a squad shooter, where you've got a fleet of four ships, you have them at the start of the mission, you don't acquire new ships over the course of the mission.
Okay.
And the reason I went into that route with the game was that, having worked on the Armada series, which were great fun to play and a lot of fun to work on, sometimes I'd be playing and I'd say, oh, you know, it's not very Star Trek-y that you can build a Sovereign-class ship in 30 seconds.
Right, that's true. I mean, even just the idea of having every battle having to have bases and things like that doesn't really map to what you see in the movies and what you see on the TV shows.
And the one thing I heard from all the fans was, you know, when I lose one of my ships, I don't really care that much. If you have 50 Sovereign-class ships and it takes 30 seconds to build one, well, just one goes away, you just
pump out a few more.
Pump out another.
Right. It's not the Enterprise. It's not.
Right.
It doesn't have that sort of name to it.
Whereas in Star Trek, all the ships are important. They have names. They have histories. They have captains. The loss of a ship in a Star Trek episode is a tragic thing. I remember in Deep Space Nine in the final season when they had those huge battles and you'd see a torpedo shoot through the saucer section of a Galaxy-class ship. It was, you're like, whoa, that's horrible.
And that's not like Star Trek, where it almost never got that far, sort of thing.
Right. So we really went about making it so that you cared about the ships. And losing a ship was a big deal, is a big deal in the game.
Okay. You know, I mentioned the game on our site, on 10.net. I actually posted that, hey, it's really cool, and forget about Gears of War. Star Trek Legacy's coming, so just save your money. And one of the first things someone said was, I hope I get to name my ships. Did they get to name their ships? I'm not. They were curious about that because they wanted to give sort of meaningful names to their ships. I think they were saying even things like the, you know, USS Twin Towers and things like that. But they definitely had a meaning attached to their ships.
Well, we are enabling a lot of tools for the mod community.
Okay.
So the game is for the 360 as well as for Windows.
Right.
And the Windows version will have tools associated with it that you can use to create your own ships.
Things that you can't necessarily do on the 360, because
it's
not the kind of environment that supports people loading in their own skins or models. Or even entering a name without a keyboard sort of thing.
So, yeah, exactly. Right. And we didn't want to put something in that the players would find very difficult to use. And have the textures of the name coming on the ship take extra memory up.
Oh, that's true. If you actually want it to be displayed and everything like that, that gets really complicated.
So there's some differences between the Windows and 360 versions.
One of the things that, when you move a complex game like this to a console, or when you build it for the console, is it difficult to come up with a control structure that works well, sort of thing, like a controller or a button structure sort of thing?
It took us a long time to settle on the control scheme that we have. And we tried a lot of different variations, and even within the system now, you can use the joysticks to fly the ship in real time, which is a slight divergence from the core concept of you're the captain of the ship.
Right.
But it's just fun to like.
Instead of just giving headings and leaving
Right.
other people.
But you can give headings also.
Okay.
You can choose a direction, look, and hit A, and you'll start going in that direction.
Okay.
So we really put a lot of effort into that, and we think the control scheme we ended up with is a good one. And actually, I've always felt that you should, even for the PC, design your game as if it was going to be played with a console controller to keep the number of options understandable.
And easier to use sort of thing.
Right. We at different points in time, had options for, have different... all these different shield facings, and you put different energy in it, and you can target all these different subsystems. What we found is that you were no longer giving the level of orders that the captain of a starship gives.
It was micromanaging at that point, sort of thing. That's very interesting to me, because I've played a lot of these games on a PC, and some of them get to be too much micromanagement, where honestly, it's like work. It starts to be almost too much like work versus being sort of that sort of fast-paced enjoyment sort of thing.
Definitely.
Now, to focus more in on your specialty, can you tell me what there is in the game around AI, and then I guess also, is there some sort of replayable modes that use AI?
Well, you can play in skirmish. We have a skirmish mode in there where you can choose up to three opponents. You can make one of them or more of them allies.
Okay.
You know, you could have set up a skirmish mission where you're a Federation and you have an AI team playing Klingon and an AI playing Romulan all against the Borg.
Okay.
And choose different levels of difficulty for each of the different foes.
To me, that's what I want in a game like that. Mostly because, I've talked about this before in other videos I've done, but I have little kids. And playing online with even my friends is hard because I have to keep pausing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So for me, once I finish the single player missions, the storyline, which we could potentially talk about with the designer in a little bit, but when I finish playing those, the game can kind of get stale.
Yes.
But what I liked back to the games, like I believe the first one I had that I liked, like this was Age of Empires, had just kind of a random map, three opponents, and off we go sort of thing. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to say that, well, I can start raising the difficulty by having more of the opponent ships and things like that.
And we have a bunch of different maps. Some of them have shipyards where you can repair your ship. Some of them don't.
Right.
You can allow respawning or not, set time limits or not. So there's a lot of fun in the skirmish. I actually have been marginally obsessed with it over the last week.
Right. And with the AI itself, I mean, a lot of companies come to Mad Doc to add AI or to improve the AI in their game.
Yeah.
So, should we expect really good AI then in Star Trek Legacy? Is that
I think you'll find it's pretty good. It's pretty darn good.
So,
you know,
what kind of things do you do differently, or what kind of things do you think are sort of the what's missing in the AI in other games? Not to shoot any particular one down, but in general, what kind of things are being kind of missed?
Well, I see that the two frontiers for different genres of games.
Let that ring for a second. Okay.
I feel like the things that are missing from AI in different games are in the strategy genre. Well, AI for strategy games is very, very difficult. And a lot of people have no idea what they're doing when they implement it. So you see games where the AI is essentially just cheating the whole way. There's this one game that I won't name where the AI didn't have to pay money for its units. It automatically teched up at the same rate that you teched up at. And it would know what units you had and automatically build, apparently for free, a matching force of units. So the main strategies you can use in a strategy game are tech up, win the resource war, or rush.
Right.
And all three of these fail.
Not going to work against an AI that doesn't have to compete on equal footing.
It doesn't have to compete, and it was disappointing, and there's no replay value in the skirmish there. Now, most people have gotten past that, but the thing that I see as the future of AI for strategy games is actually tactics recognition, where you start looking at what the player's doing and saying, oh, they're doing a rush right now.
Okay.
And so I'm going to base my tactics based on my understanding of the current situation as well as a prediction of what the human player is going to do and a recognition of their tactic. And that's how human players play.
Sure.
So
is there any sort of memory you'd think where they remember that around this time this person generally does a rush, or
You can start putting in prediction of this tactic follows this tactic. You can start trying to predict where their base is based on where their units are moving.
Right.
There's a lot of that, not reaction to what you see, but extrapolation from what you see to a strategy for the other team, and then coming up with a counter strategy.
Sure.
And I think that's an important step. For first-person type games, I just feel like there's so much work to be done in terms of developing characters.
Right.
So our company currently has 150 people. We have three teams in development. And the legacy team's finishing up this year. We have a couple of games next year also. One of them is a squad shooter, where our main goal is to put personality in the characters in your squad. Make them seem more like people.
Right, not just automatons that you say, be aggressive or not be aggressive.
Yeah, and to do the same thing with that we're trying to do with Legacy. Where Legacy, we said, really tightly, who are you in this game? Well, you're the captain in charge of a small fleet. And we make the orders you give at that level, appropriately. And for a squad shooter, we don't want the player to have to tell your character, okay, reload now, or if they go up to a locked door, sir, the door is locked. Okay, open it. Unlock it. Bust it open. Do whatever
I told you
the last 30 times.
Who's the rest of my squad? I've hired a bunch of idiots for the rest of my squad.
So to really capture who you are, you have to have the other characters smart enough to be who they are.
Right.
And they have to do things automatically that they would. You know, you don't have to... A police officer doesn't have to tell another police officer to handcuff somebody who's surrendered in front of them.
Right, right. or have to do the handcuffing themselves. Whereas a lot of games, sort of the anything beyond just, you know, walking and shooting, the main character ends up having to do the whole time. So that'd be nice to see.
It would be nice to see, as well as to put some personality in there,
right?
And have people react differently and interact differently and comment on the environment.
Right.
And have the guys, when they walk into a room, not play an idle animation where they're looking side to side, but instead to note there's something interesting there, there's something interesting there. Do what a person does.
Sure.
To look at the things that actually matter in the game.
Now, a lot of people, I think, believe that the limitation there has been hardware, not program.
It hasn't been. It's really the programming.
So people have been, I don't want to say lazy, but basically people have sort of left that part of the game. They haven't given it the attention it needs.
Well, and it's not really programming. It's sort of the interface between design and programming. A lot of designers don't know that. Well, it's easy to do some of these things,
right?
And a lot of programmers don't suggest to the designers that this is a good thing to do.
Right.
So, being able to straddle both fences the way that I like to do, you know, I know enough about design, enough about programming to cause trouble for everybody.
So. You yourself, I assume, you're not doing the coding yourself anymore. Is that true? Have you sort of moved yourself out of real code?
I said looking off camera. In theory I don't, but in practice I do. So
it's good to get your hands in.
I usually architect the AI systems for all the games, and then I'll implement the parts that either I have a particularly strong interest in,
right,
or that... we run out of people to work on.
Sure. Okay. Well, it is your specialty. You don't want to leave it completely to other people. Where's the fun in that?
Yeah, exactly.
Sitting in your office and just playtesting other people's work.
Yeah.
With your dog.
With my dog.
Who is being very well behaved.
She is.
I think.
She really wants to not be well behaved, but she's
doing really well.
She's doing a good job.
So.
It will help if I roll her over and give her a belly rub.
So, so looking back, I mean, Empire Earth 2, you know, an amazing number of accolades and awards, a lot of which was for, actually, the AI. I think there was even one quote, like the, you know, revolutionized the RTS world, the best RTS sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that was a sequel. And one thing I noticed that you've worked on a few sequels.
Yes.
Star Trek Legacy is, obviously it's a sequel in the idea of Star Trek games.
Yeah.
But it is a first
game.
You're not taking someone else's and adding to it. You get to start beginning. Is that something you guys prefer to do, or is it just sort of you work on whatever comes? Or?
I mean, to some extent, when the company was younger, the truth is you work on whatever comes.
Sure.
But it's always more fun to work on something that you design, and it was great working on Legacy because it really started from the position of what would the best Star Trek combat game be?
Right.
Not, we want this genre with this license.
So those things weren't already predetermined and you had to work with that. Now what about, obviously, working inside someone else's world like that? I mean, you're not just making up a space combat game where you're just sort of run with it. You probably have restrictions. Of course, you have a lot of material to draw on. So is that hard to work with? Is it Paramount that you'd have to work with?
We worked with Paramount, CBS Paramount. So they've recently become two companies, one the movie branch and one the television branch. And so in the middle of everything, we had to switch who we were interacting with.
Do you work with only one of those now then, like CBS?
Or? Yeah, CBS is responsible for the Star Trek franchise at this point.
Oh, okay. Right.
And they've been great to work with. Paramount was great before that. So, you know, I had a good relationship for the past 8 years with the guys at Paramount. And we had one guy over there in particular, Harry Lang, who was just spectacular at helping us get the permissions we needed, getting any resources we needed, playing the game, giving us feedback.
Sure, sure. And what happens, I mean, obviously sometimes you're going to want to have a ship that doesn't exist in the shows or the movies. You're going to want to have, well, basically you're going to have things that deviate from the existing canon sort of thing. How hard is that to get that approved?
It's not terribly hard because, first, the styles are very well defined in the Star Trek universe. So when we create something new, which we have to do a lot for Legacy because Legacy spans all the time eras in Star Trek, so from Archer's Enterprise era through original series, Next Gen, and beyond. And we have, for skirmish and multiplayer, all four of the main races, Federation, Klingon, Borg, and Romulan, they each have ships fleshing out that entire timeline. So there weren't Borg ships in these earlier timelines.
So you had to design
yeah.
sort of complementary, you know, class ships for all those different eras.
Yeah.
And even I would think that if you look at Star Trek Enterprise, the Archer's Enterprise, we didn't get to see the full range of ships that we right. ended up seeing in Next Generation and things right. like that. So you probably had to come up with
We had to fill in the gaps. Now, the guys at CBS and Paramount had a number of...
You're completely covered in dog hair.
I shouldn't have worn the black shirt. but, you know, it had Mad Dog on it, so...
It's good, and I think...
But the good thing is I can take it off. And at least I have a
t-shirt. And you have another
t-shirt. Another Mad Dog shirt on underneath it. We have Team Spirit here.
I'm not going to be taking mine off.
This is actually better than my original plan. I actually own a Kirk shirt, and I was going to take that off in the middle of the interview, but I couldn't find it in my laundry pile today. Not that I wear it all the time.
Sure. Yeah, it was dirty. I wonder why.
So what were we talking about? Oh, new ships?
Yeah, just the idea that you had to sort of go beyond what was already yeah. there in some of these cases.
And they've been great to work with. They, you know, we would send them designs. Every now and then they'd say, oh, those, you know, the sort of wings of that ship look too Klingon, or, you know, if we're talking about the Romulan ship. We'd get good guidance from them,
right.
but they're very understanding. And
you guys have to build something at this point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and they helped us with the stories and such, and we have a big name Star Trek writer who did the story, DC
right.
Fontana.
Yeah, you have DC Fontana doing the storylines, but
yeah.
you also had voice acting.
Oh,
from
yeah.
five?
All five of the captains.
Five captains.
That was really a treat.
Were there other cast members as well that were involved in voice acting, or was it the
yeah.
game is focused around the captains?
It's focused around the captains.
So.
I mean, we have some actors who have done Klingon stuff, and the Borg Collective is always fun to work with. It's actually these six guys who when they do it, and you hear all the voices layered,
right? Right.
You would think they do it digitally, record one and
sure.
the other.
Sure.
But they actually have these guys who have been trained to do it in sequence.
And they actually talk together.
At the same time. And one of them, at the beginning, he'll sort of count out time, and then they'll say the line, and they do it perfectly. And
wow.
It's one of the best
Those
things.
Would be great guys to have at parties. They could just always talk,
yeah.
synchronized, and it would be very disturbing.
Yeah, very disturbing.
That's great. So that must have been a lot of fun if you're into Star Trek, which
yeah.
I know that you're certainly maybe not the world's biggest Trekkie, but you're a fan.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
We're going to talk to a couple more people here. Maybe we'll try to track down who is the biggest Trekkie amongst the people we can talk to.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great talking to you.
Oh, absolutely. My
yeah.
pleasure.
We're going to chat with a few other people, learn a bit more about it, and at some point we're gonna see some of the game.
Excellent. Maybe you'll have a chance to play some multiplayer. And,
oh,
I'd
like
to.
Of course, you guys playing against guys who actually have been playing it for weeks, it'll be...
Yeah, we'll crush it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is fun.
Yeah.
I've heard you enjoy it, too.
So. I do. I like that.
I think she would like her
little frock on.
Her frock on.
Okay, well, I'm going to go take care of the bulldog now, and
okay.
Then I'll get back to working on the game.
Great.
But,
thanks a lot.
Yep. Enjoy.